This is Discourse 8 and Lesson number 9. The last lesson we stopped on page 64, about halfway down the left-hand column. There's a new paragraph there. We'll begin at that paragraph. And you saw how they falsified what was going on. The people thought they were being moved to another place, and they assembled. Now here we go to that assembly. The next morning, masses of Jews reported at the appointed spot. They were directed to proceed along this street toward the Jewish cemetery and into an area comprising the cemetery itself and a part of the Babi Yar ravine. The area was cordoned off by a barbed wire fence and guarded by police and these SS men and so forth. As the Jews approached the ravine, they were forced to hand over all the valuables in their possession, to take off all their clothes, and to advance toward the ravine edge in groups of 10. Now, this is going to be totally reversed. The nations are going to have to restore all this material they took from God's people, and they'll be bringing it in to the new nation of Israel one of these days. So the whole world owes everything to the Jew in payment for these atrocities. And I'm going to show you that the United States is party to this. And therefore, what we're so-called loaning or giving Israel is peanuts side of what we will be forced to give to Israel in the days that lie ahead. It's only a beginning. God is going to settle this whole score. And this is all proof of Scripture, beyond any question of doubt. Continue. When they reached the edge, they were gunned down by automatic fire. The shooting was done by several squads of SD and SIPO personnel, police, and Waffen men of this command unit. The squads relieved one another every few hours. When the day ended, the bodies were covered with a thin layer of soil. According to official reports of this group, in 2 days of shooting, that's the figure I gave you above under the picture, 33,771. In other words, 17,000 Jews were murdered per day. In the months that followed, many more thousands of Jews were seized, taken to Babi Yar, and shot. Among the general population, there were some who helped. Now watch this very carefully, because now I'm going to begin to shift this blame. Some who helped Jews go into hiding. See, there were a few believers that loved the Jews and made an effort. But there were also a significant number who informed on them to the Germans and gave them over. I had personal contact with one of these men that supplied food to hidden Jews to keep them going. And he mentioned this, how they would betray the Jews and turn them over. After the war, the officer in charge of the SIPO and SD Bureau testified that his Kiev office received so many letters from Ukrainian population informing on Jews by the bushel that the office could not deal with them all for lack of manpower. Evidence of betrayal of Jews by the Kiev population was also given by Jewish survivors and by the Soviet writer Anatole, this is his name, Babi Yar, served as a slaughterhouse for non-Jews as well, such as gypsies, Soviet prisoners of war. According to the estimate given by the Soviet Research Commission on Nazi Crimes, 100,000 persons were murdered at Babi Yar. In mid-August, the unit embarked on its task of exhuming the corpses, that is, taking them out of the pit in Babi Yar, and cremating them. The ghastly job itself was carried out by inmates of a nearby concentration camp from which the Germans brought in 327 men, of whom 100 were Jews. The prisoners were housed in a bunker carved out from the ravine wall. It had an iron gate that was locked during the night and was watched by a guard with a machine gun. They had chains bolted to their legs, and those who fell ill or lagged behind were shot on the spot. The mass graves were opened up by bulldozers, and it was the prisoners' job to drag the corpses to cremation pyres, which consisted of wooden logs doused in gasoline on a base of railroad ties. Now, the purpose of this was to hide the murders and try and and get away with it, so to speak. Well, they didn't, and all the testimony is in. Now we go up to top of 65. Now they weren't satisfied with 17,000 killed a day, so that was terrible. They got to get it up higher per hour, as you'll see shortly. In order to speed up the rate of murder, the Germans began to use poison gas. At first, they experimented with gas vans, which were mobile. Later, they developed gas chambers in connection with concentration camps. The following are just a few notes from the Encyclopedia Judaica and the Encyclopedia of the Holocaust. Forced labor, starvation, and disease killed thousands more. Gas vans. Poison gas was used by the Nazis to murder many hundreds of thousands of people. Various methods were employed, one of them being gas vans. The first time that the Nazis used gas was in the euthanasia program. You know, that's what they're talking about here, putting the older people to death, in which the victims were retarded persons, the mentally or chronically ill, and habitual criminals. They were put into hermetically sealed chambers into which carbon monoxide gas was released from metal containers. The first experiment utilizing a gas van was made in 1940 at that given place near Lodz. Mentally ill children were locked inside a sealed van and put to death by the same method. In the early stages of the war with the Soviet Union, this mobile killing squad killed many thousands of people by shooting. Now I want you to see this and underline it and read it. But before long, the men in these units complained about the mental anguish they suffered from having to kill women, children, and ill people. Their superiors at this Reich Security Main Office in Berlin then began to look for an alternate method of murder, one that would reduce the mental stress to which the executioners were exposed. Now, if there is any settlement of the score after death, just how these men that carried this thing out will suffer untold misery. If there is, I don't know that there is. I'm not sure of any of these kind of things. These things are very difficult to determine when you get out of their present realm. But it's not difficult to determine what went on in this terrible effort of the adversary, Satan, the dragon, to reach the woman Israel. The first to find such a method was Arthur Niebuhr, the commander of this group. His men had been killing mental patients by shooting and with explosives, but these procedures had not proved satisfactory. Consequently, he tried out a technique of killing them by channeling exhaust gas from a truck into a sealed chamber, and was able to report to Berlin on the success of the experiment. See, that's the way so many people in this country have committed suicide. When the first gas vans were ready in September 1941, they were tried out in this camp, the victims being Soviet prisoners of war. So you see, Germany didn't care what they did with prisoners of war. They didn't follow any of the rules. They were totally operating under the dragon. Totally. And they killed prisoners of war just as well. Following the successful tryouts, more trucks were fitted with a new apparatus, and by June the 23rd, 1942, 20 such vehicles were in operation, with 10 others in various stages of preparation. Some of the trucks made by the Saurer firm were larger in size, with a capacity of 50 to 60 people, while others made by the Diamond Rio firm had a smaller capacity of 25 to 30 people. A memorandum submitted to Rauf by Wiley Just of the SD on June the 5th, 1942, attests to the effectiveness of the vans. Quote, "Since December 1941, 97,000 persons have been processed with the help of three vans without a single disruption. Some 320,000 persons were killed by this method in the Kelmno camp, most of them Jews. 15 gas vans were in operation in German-occupied Soviet territory, where the group put them at the disposal of their subunits. The commander of the SS and police in Riga had one or two gas vans for use in Latvia and Estonia." Now, those countries are in the news today, you know, trying to get separated from Russia, and in the area between these states and the Eastern War Front. Four vans were operated in Belarusia by the commander of another group, security police, and from evidence given by the drivers and the SS men who operated the vans, it's possible to reconstruct how the killing was carried out and to learn about the victims. As a rule, the gas vans served to empty prisons that had filled up with Jewish prisoners, men, women, and children, most of whom had been caught while trying to hide or escape from the action, that is, the total action of destroying all the Jews. This group, next group, had five or six vans at its disposal, two used by this one, that one, I can't read all those names to you, and apparently one by another group. In late December, I just wanted to put those in. The reason I've got them in is to show you the number of vans. Now, you can go down the side, and if you have followed what I've said, and you can go back and calculate on your own if you want to, but right here, I have shown 35, 60, 70, 80, 90, 40, 44, roughly a little over 50 vans in operation. When you realize how many thousand they killed a day, you can see what went on. In late December 1941 and early January 1942, this unit liquidated the remaining Jews of Kharkov by shooting and gassing them. Some Jews had gone into hiding. When they were discovered, they were taken to this prison and then killed in gas vans together with the prisoners. A similar method of killing prisoners was used in Kiev, as recounted by a former officer. The driver of a gas van for the post-war trial said, quote, "The truck was loaded in the compound and 40 people were put in, men, women, and children. I had to tell them that they were being taken to work." See, now that's what the serpent does. That's where the serpent works. He tells you that you're reading the Bible when you're not reading the Bible. And that is his deceptive half of it. And this is a real entity that we're facing in the serpent and the dragon. These commanded angels are doing a lot of this damage. Stop and think just a little before you yourself, I'm on the top of 66, are badly deceived by the serpent. Where did all these people that carried out these atrocities go to church? Today, Austria, and watch carefully, I put these all in so you can see them. Austria is 84.3% Roman Catholic. Belgium, 90% Roman Catholic. Czechoslovakia, 65.6% Roman Catholic. France, 76.4% Roman Catholic. Germany is 42.9% Roman Catholic and 41.6% Lutheran. So you see there you've got 83%. Hungary is 62.4% Roman Catholic. Italy is 83% Roman Catholic. Poland is 95% Roman Catholic. And most all of the concentration camps and all of the death camps or the cremation camps were in Poland. All of these are under the dragon's authority, the Roman Ecumenical Assembly. Now, here we go to some more. You watch how this works out. Now, these are people, you can't help but face up to a fact that here's an entire nation carrying out this wholesale murder, plus fighting a war in the front, and that meant that practically every single living soul in the nation was involved. So where do they go to church? Catholic and Lutheran, and they're programmed to kill off the Jews. And so they take it in stride. And this is the nation that we helped rehabilitate and get back on its feet. All right, let's go. In the southern Ukraine, the Crimea, and these other places, three or four gas vans were used. Now, they're getting more of them here. But by means of the vans, these prisons were emptied of Jews. The Jews of these two were liquidated. The chronically ill and sick Jewish children in the large hospitals and spas were murdered, and the Jews of these other towns were put to death. I just want you to have them in front of you. You don't have to even learn to pronounce these words. Just look at what's going on. After several months of use in the Soviet Union, the gas vans were found to have technical deficiencies and problems developed in their operation. In May 1942, this fella was sent on an inspection tour in the course of which he visited all these units. On his return to Berlin, he submitted a written report in which he singled out two major problems. Look at the first one. the mental stress on the SS men, who had to unload the vans themselves since they could not entrust prisoners with the task lest they flee, and two, the frequent breakdowns caused by poor condition of the Soviet roads. Becker's report was used as an exhibit by the prosecution in the post-war Nuremberg trials. After the war, this fellow, the commander of a group, testified at some subsequent Nuremberg proceedings, July the 3rd, 1947, April the 10th, 1948, Heinrich Himmler had given the order to kill Jewish women and children by gassing, and it was for this purpose that the vans were supplied. As it turned out, the gas vans did not meet the expectations that the Nazi leaders had had for them to be an effective instrument for the trouble-free killing of masses of people. For that purpose, stationary gas chambers using hydrogen cyanide, Zyklon B, proved speedier and more efficient. Still, the total number of victims of the gas vans was approximately 700,000. Half of them in the occupied areas of the Soviet Union, and the other half in the Kelmno extermination camp. Now we go to the gas chambers, method used by the Nazis for efficient mass murder. Both mobile and stationary gas chambers were put into use. The first stationary gas chambers that were to help facilitate the final solution of the Jewish question were put up at Belzec in February 1942. Following several trial gassings with carbon monoxide cylinders and exhaust gas, the latter was chosen as a better alternative since it was cheaper and did not require special supplies. The next month, regular killings commenced at Belzec by means of three gas chambers in a single wooden barrack. Sobibor was next in May, but here the installation was a brick building with concrete foundations that contained the gas chambers. The third and last of the action extermination camps, Nisswan and Treblinka, whose three gas chambers could be sealed hermetically, airtight, which was not the case in the other two extermination camps. In the summer and fall of 1942, the capacity of the three extermination camps was greatly increased, both by enlarging the existing gas chambers and by adding new ones. Thus, in the 10 gas chambers of Treblinka, 2,500 persons could be put to death in a single gassing round lasting an hour. In other words, at this one extermination camp, they could put to death 2,500 people an hour. And if you kept those going 24 hours a day, just imagine the terrible total of slaughter. The victims were forced to enter with their arms raised so that as many people as possible could be squeezed into the chambers. Babies and small children were thrown on top of the human mass. The tighter the chambers were packed and the warmer the temperature inside the chamber, the faster the victims suffocated. All the gas chambers in the extermination camps were disguised, here's the serpent, going into action again, as shower rooms. In Treblinka, the Nazis went even further by implanting flower beds and creating what on the surface appeared to be a pleasant environment. They attempted to practice complete deception. When the latter proved impractical, gassing experiments with Zyklon B were made at the main camp of Auschwitz using Soviet prisoners of war in preparation for the mass murder of Jews in the adjoining Birkenau camp. All right, we're now up to the top of 67. Now, before I read these lines, there is a picture, the top picture, of a large gas chamber at this concentration camp. And you get some idea, together with other buildings, it's preserved as a Polish national memorial. I'll talk to you about that in a minute. Then down underneath is the Auschwitz concentration camp. It just gives you a long view of the barracks upon barracks, as thousands and thousands of people were sent here. And underneath, the Birkenau concentration camp. Now, these camps here are both part of a same unit. They are just a very short distance away. Now, go to the printed at the top. There's very little reason to establish these places as memorials as long as the churches are going to teach lies. because you see in Poland, where these places are, the Catholic Church is dominant. The same evil, in fact, as you well know, the Pope was Polish. The same evil forces, satanic forces, are still at work in the Seventh World Power. Even though the Eighth is formed too, and they're getting ready for a collision course. Remember, the Pope hates the Jews, the Pope will not recognize the State of Israel, and neither do the Muslims. So that Baker, trying to make any kind of a peace in the Middle East, is fighting against Almighty God. Because it's God's land, it's God's people, and it's the enemy that is coming in from both East and West. To teach that God is through with the Jews, and to blame Jews today for the killing Jesus is, of course, totally false. The adversary, by his river of anti-Semitism, has brought about the destruction of millions of God's chosen people. Then, too, the church has often taught that they are the true Israel, or even that they are the true Jews. So the church is packing the lies out and expecting not to have repercussions. Sooner or later, there may be some. I don't know whether we're going to have many believers left. It says, when he cometh, will he find the trust? And it requires a negative answer, no. So we're fast running out of time, and we're already entering fast into God's vengeance and God's wrath. Read a few of the reactions of the churches during the Holocaust. Now, I thought this was very important for you to see. That we have already seen that the church itself was the guilty party all through the Inquisition and the Crusades. Now, I want you to see how the churches were reacting to this. Christian anti-Judaism derives from the earliest years of the Christian community, when the majority of Jews refused to accept the supernatural claims made by the person of Jesus of Nazareth. Its character changed in the 4th century, by which point most Christians were Gentiles, and the Christianity became the state religion of the Roman Empire. That's exactly what I've shown you from the very beginning of this discourse. It's as true as can be. The theologians of the 4th and 5th centuries codified and extended hostility by claiming that all Jews as a community shared the blame for the crucifixion of Jesus. That the destruction of Jerusalem in the year 70 was a divine punishment. That the Jewish people were to be treated with severity because of their obstinate blindness in refusing the promises made in their own traditional scriptures, and that the church had now superseded Judaism as the vehicle of salvation. Well, there you see the serpent hard at work. And remember that this blindness, in part, that has happened unto Israel is by God's providence. That's why I use parables, so some of them could understand and some of them would not understand. These themes became the basis of traditional Christian teaching for many centuries, providing theological justification for repeated acts of persecution and violence. Despite the fact that successive popes issued edicts that Jews were to be considered witnesses of the original truth of divine revelation to man, and as such regarded as potential converts, the triumphalist and monomalistic views of Orthodox Christianity led to the imposing of social and physical segregation on the Jewish communities in ghettos or in minorities throughout Christian Europe. See, as long as they'll call it Christian Europe, when it isn't Christian at all, but the Seventh World Roman Ecumenical Assembly power, or the Roman Empire under the papal system, as long as you're going to look at it that way, you're never going to come out of the fog. You're under the satanic influence, under the serpent's influence, and you're going to be content to go along with a sort of a hail, happy church fellowship, so to speak. To widespread expulsions of Jews from Christian countries such as Spain and England. See, they weren't Christian countries. That's the next part. And to the repressive and often murderous policies of the Catholic Inquisition. At least they got that much across. It was the policies of the Catholic Inquisition which went on for hundreds of years. Now here we come to the influence of Martin Luther, especially in his rabid diatribes against the Jews at the end of his career, carried over the same theological antipathies antipathies, yes, into Protestantism and contributed to the frequent persecution and expulsions of Jews from German territory and city-states during the Reformation. Some of the former followers of John Calvin, however, demonstrated a warmer sympathy for the Jews as the originators of Hebraic morality and the sacred scriptures. The rise of secularist thought in the 18th century and of Romanticism in the 19th led to increasing skepticism in Western Europe about traditional Christian dogmatic teachings, including Christian attitudes toward Judaism. The ingrained religious prejudices, however, remained entrenched in popular culture, especially in Eastern Europe. Other forms of anti-Semitism, based on social, economic, or national ideas, increasingly came to overlap and supersede theological antipathies, adapting the stereotypes of earlier centuries and infusing the religious vocabulary with political and racist connotations. The incremental process was notable in the anti-Semitic propaganda of the early 20th century. See, we're way up in the 1900s. And in the formation of explicitly anti-Semitic political parties in Germany, France, and Austria. Only isolated Christian protests were voiced against the extremism of these racist views. Notably, the writings of the Protestant theologian Karl Barth and Pope Pius XI's 1938 statement, anti-Semitism is inadmissible. And of course, they say that out of one side of their mouth and practice anti-Semitism in the other. We are all spiritually Semites. See, there goes the twist again. Always trying to claim all of the promises of the Bible. And of course, if you'll listen to churches and you'll listen on the TV, you'll find that this goes on day in and day out when they're taking verse after verse out of the Old Testament that applies to Israel and has been shown clearly that it's applying to Israel. In the context, they take a verse and isolate it and say that applies to them. All false. Serpent's activity. Christian theology provided no adequate defense against the escalating violence and mass murders of the Holocaust. Roman Catholicism. Catholic attitudes toward the Nazi persecution of the Jews were ambivalent throughout the period of the Third Reich. See, they didn't care. The new Nazi regime's signature of a Reich Concord with the Vatican in July 1933 and German Catholic support for its authoritarian and nationalist stances gave rise to widespread illusions about the nature of Hitler's rule, illusions that were to be much criticized in the aftermath. This early collaboration prompted the possibility of mobilizing German Catholic opposition to the regime, even when the Nazis' pursuit of their totalitarian goals led to the increasing abrogation of the Concordat and persecution of the Church. Despite the condemnation of Nazi ideology and racism in general in the papal encyclical of March 1937, German Catholic sympathy for the Jews was evident only in individual cases, notably for Catholics of Jewish origin. Opposition was expressed more toward the methods employed by the Nazis than toward their repressive policies. The attitudes of such leading Catholics as the present bishop of Breslau were characterized by deep-rooted hostility to the Jews, strong expressions of national unity, and the desire to protect their own church institutions. They led to silent acquiescence in face of the Nuremberg Laws of 1935 and the Kristallnacht pogrom of 1938. Let's turn the tape and I'll tell you a little bit about that.